All right, this is new. I know you guys are not used to hearing this voice from us because normally it's Q and Ryan as host of Off the Bench.
Yep.
A podcast that Dead End Sports put out covering basketball, but they're not here.
So the show must go on.
Show must go on. The show always must go on. And Q's going to be back. I talked to him, but we got to get some stuff out. Basketball is
in full swing.
Yes, sir.
Full mode.
A lot of stuff to talk about.
Oh, so much to talk about. And I think there's a lot of things that I mean, you know, and the thing about it, I remember talking about it on Twitter, and I was like, I can't wait for the NBA season.
I think we all couldn't wait.
Yeah, but people were hitting me up like, really? It's going to be boring. It's going to be whack.
You know what? Because I feel like a lot of the pundits, Stephen A., you know, were saying that this season was going to, oh, I just want to get to the playoff. I know it's going to happen. No, you don't. There's always a lot of storylines. There's always going to be a lot of young players making noise.
Yeah.
There's always going to be
Andrew Wiggins.
Andrew Wiggins, yes. And Cat. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you're going to have that veteran guy that you had high expectations fall off the face of the earth. And then you have those guys that had all of the potential in the world start to realize it, DeMar DeRozan.
You're right.
You know what I'm saying? Because Toronto, if he plays like that, they're for real.
Right.
And if Kyle Lowry plays anything like he did last season, that team is a serious threat.
Does it feel like he's taking a back seat to DeRozan now?
Of course. Yes.
Especially as a point guard too, you got to take that back seat. You got to distribute the ball. He's the guy. Yeah,
yeah. Because I mean, 30 again.
Game. Yeah. No. Not again. 30 a game.
30 a game. 30 plus a game.
Damn. Yeah. I was just looking, man, and I don't know where they're gonna get the other source of scoring, but he's doing a lot of heavy lifting for that. But it definitely seems like he's passed that torch to DeRozan. And that is really like his team. And it kind of makes sense if you think about DeRozan, because we all thought he was going to leave. And he re-signed with Toronto.
Yep.
And it's like he made the decision to basically put his stamp on this team and this organization and be like, I'm coming back. I'm going to try to get Toronto a championship. But this is the place where I can be that star. And he's trying to, I don't know if he ever take Vince's spot, but he's trying to make his own name.
If he keeps at this pace. He can. I mean, as far as like breaking all the records for Toronto Raptors, I think he can.
Yeah, but I don't think he'll ever reach the iconic status of Vince Carter because you got to remember, Vince Carter was one of the most loved and hated Toronto or Canadian athletes. You know what I'm saying? Obviously, he's American, but playing in Toronto. But I don't know if DeMar DeRozan is ever going to have that type of impact because what Vince Carter did with that slam dunk contest.
I was just about to say, what he did with the slam dunk contest.
What Vince Carter meant to the game of basketball, I don't know if DeMar DeRozan is ever going to have that type of stage.
He's not as flashy as
he's not. But look, the man got some hops.
Yeah.
The man is averaging over 30, and he's doing it officially, and he's doing it contrary to what the trend is in the NBA. The man is shooting mid-range shots. He's shooting long twos. He got post-ups. Yep. You know what I'm saying? He's living at the free throw line.
Yep.
Right now, the trend in basketball is 3-and-D. You know what I'm saying? Got to shoot them three-point shots. You got to play the defense, and you got to get layups. Mm-hmm. When you watch somebody like James Harden, that's exactly what he does. He gets layups, he hits three-point shots, and he gets to the free throw line. That's kind of like the model of efficiency.
He leads the league in most free throw attempts. So you know,
for like almost like a decade
now. Yeah, like he's
been that long.
Yeah,
he's always going to the bucket. He's always getting fouled.
Ever since he's been in Houston, he's been in Houston like six, seven years now.
Yeah.
Let me ask y'all something about this because I had to get my cowherd on and I couldn't really get into it. But as, you know, basketball players, I know there was the game against Cleveland. And I don't know if you guys saw this, but where he hooked LeBron's arm.
Who?
James Harden.
Oh, yeah.
He'll go, like, LeBron will be defending him and LeBron will put that arm out there and James Harden will actually go in and hook his arm. And flail and get the foul. But so I'm looking at that, and LeBron's complaining. He did that to somebody else too. Like, what do you guys think about that? Because that is that technique. I mean, it is a foul, but he's actually like locking his arm to create that
technique,
foul.
Man. Technique.
Yes.
Old school players used Rodman. Come on now, Rodman used to have so many techniques. you know, as far as playing the game and getting the physical advantage or disadvantage on someone.
You know what it is,
that's
B?
All, what?
It's crafty. It's getting a rule put in place for you. And when you do that, you're special in the NBA. KD has a rule to swing through. Remember, you used to get free throws for that. You don't get free throws anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Wait, the swing through.
Okay, so whenever somebody's defending you, right, and they have their arms out like this, KD will put the ball here, and as soon as you put your arms here, he will just go right into it.
Swing up, and that'd be
Isn't that what he's doing now, though? James Harden?
He does it, too. No, he's one of the players that does it, but it was KD's patented move, and then they had to change the rule.
When you said KD, I thought I was thinking about KG.
Kevin Durant. That's KD's move, and whenever you have a rule that's put in place, it's because you're special. The whole zone in the league, because of AI, you're special. AI, the whole Hacker Shack, you're special. This right here, if they have to change the rule, it just shows how special James Harden is.
But you also have to see it, and I don't think the referees are seeing that.
He's crafty with it.
Exactly.
He's crafty with it.
Exactly. You know something about James Harden that was brought to my attention, what makes him so special, right?
I'm actually starting to like James Harden.
Yeah, I like him at point guard.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I like him at point guard because at first I was just like, I didn't like him. I'm starting to like him.
You know what makes James Harden unique? Because every basketball player, right, like they're unique. We measure them for how fast they are, how high they could jump, how strong they are. When you measure James Harden, he's average NBA athleticism, everything, except for one thing, how he slows down. The way he slows down, when he's going full speed at you, and he takes his Euro, one, two, the way he could slow down and sports science, this is like fact, right?
Yeah.
So like the way sports science did it, there was like they've never measured somebody with deacceleration like that. That's what makes him special. That's what allows him to live at the line. Because if I'm coming at you full head of steam, and then I can slow down, and you're still moving there, you're reaching and doing all of this stuff to try to stop me. That's how he lives at the line, man.
He's so crafty, man. His footwork game is really good, really good. And that's why he can draw those fouls so many times. That's why he lives at the free throw line. You don't like it?
I didn't like that. I thought it was cheap, you know, and it's just, I mean, I get
so
it.
So was the KD thing. Yeah. The KD thing's really cheap.
Yeah.
And now that you mentioned that, I guess I understand kind of where he got it. Maybe took it and involved it to something else. So, you said stop.
Yeah, man. Just keep it one hand, man. Keep it simple.
Sorry. Y'all doing a great job.
See?
It's the old man. I'm trying to tell you, man.
He's real fidgety. Yeah, well, you know. Anyway, it's not the coffee. Joel Embiid. So you were saying something earlier about him. I haven't listened to the interview he did with Woj.
Mm-hmm. I haven't either.
Yeah, but
I like Woj.
You listen to his podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. Like some of the stuff people are saying is amazing. Like it gives me another insight into the mind of a basketball player that you normally don't get. Did you guys I'm getting off topic, but did you guys listen to the one with Kenyon Martin?
Yes.
No. I heard about it, but I didn't listen.
You gotta listen to that, people. Okay. Like, when we talk about old – you've seen Martin play. You know how he is. But that was good, wasn't it,
Yes, B? It was, man.
Man.
God. You can almost – because you can't really say last breed because he wasn't in the Kobe era.
He was in the Kobe era.
Yeah, around 2004.
But he retired way earlier.
I think that's what it is. Yeah. But he came in. I don't think he came in way after Kobe, though. What year did
he came? Nah. He was guarding Kobe in the finals. What are you talking about?
He was. I forgot. He was.
He played with Jay Kidd and them.
He was. Yeah.
Early 2000s.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Gary Kittle's in them. Why? What you talking about?
Kiki Van Horn. Okay. Yep. That's right.
When I think about, when I was listening to that, because I almost forgot about Kenyon Martin. And when I was listening to that, I'm like, yeah, man, this dude jumped out the gym, was definitely that pedigree of the 90s that he brought to it, was no nonsense. I didn't know about the Tim Thomas thing. That was cool, too, like to hear that story because I think, you know, we didn't have social media, that stuff didn't get around.
Right. Stuff ain't going to get put out like that.
But when you guys think about Kenyon Martin as a number one pick and how his career went, played in the finals twice, like is that – like, because his numbers are not going to leap off the screen at you.
No, they're not.
But when you think about his career and the impact that he has, like, did his career, validate him being the number one pick.
No, not at all. Because when you look at the number one pick, it's supposed to be franchise changing. He did, though. He didn't change the franchise. He added to that franchise. Jay Kidd changed that franchise. That was the reason why they were good. Now, he was a piece, and I can't remember the year he was drafted, but I want to say that draft wasn't that great.
I think it was 2001. 2001 is when he got drafted.
Okay.
Remember he had broke his leg. He broke his leg his senior year at Cincinnati University.
Hey, and real quick before we jump back to Joel Embiid, I know we're on Kenyon Martin and him playing in Cincinnati. Do you guys remember Melvin Levitt?
Mm-mm.
The Levitator? Oh,
not
man,
at all.
Y'all tripping. Because he played with Kenyon Martin in Cincinnati. Mm. And those 2000 two guys.
Draft, 2000.
2000?
Draft.
Yep. Oh, my God. Ken, go back and look at Melvin Levitt, okay? The Levitator. Crazy. Crazy career at Cincinnati. But, talking about Kenyon, no, the number one pick typically is for the guy that's going to completely change your franchise. Kenyon added to that franchise, but he didn't completely change it. Now, in that draft, were there some other guys that you would have taken over him? I really don't remember everybody that came out of that 2000 draft, but nobody jumps out, no. Mm-hmm. So, he's validated because I think he was the best talent at the time. But, you know, when you have that first overall pick, you're typically wanting to get a guy that you know for the next 10, 15 years, you're going to be able to build around that guy. Kenyon was never that. Kenyon was somebody that you added to the mix.
So when you look back at that as an organization, though, and you look at that pick and you're evaluating picks and you look at the Kenyon Martin pick and – yeah, he may have added to it, and I understand Jason Kidd was the piece that really mattered the most. But
and I was about to say real quick, I'm gonna give you the quick draft selections for that draft since we on the subject. You got Kenyon Martin at one, Stromile Swift at two, Darius Miles at three, Marcus Fires. I remember him. Marcus Fires at four,
Chicago.
Mike Miller, DeMar Johnson, Chris Hems, Jamal Crawford. Jarrell Prisbilla.
Prisbilla,
yeah.
To Milwaukee.
Kenyon Doolin. Ooh, my goodness. Eaton Thomas. Mateen Cleaves. Yeah, wow. Jason Collier. Hede Turkoglu. Desmond Mason. Y'all remember him. Quentin Richardson. Jamal McGlure. Speedy Claxton. Morris Peterson. Deshaun Stevenson. Dang, yeah. Yeah.
Jamal McGlure turned into a – wait. I'm thinking about Jamal Mashburn.
No. He was a two-time All-Star, one time with Miami.
Yep. Yep, that's correct.
I remember.
So, just real quick.
So based off, that's what I'm saying. Look, I don't want to say I'm a savant when it comes to basketball stuff, but I remember a lot of little nuanced stuff like that. That draft, I knew they didn't have nobody. So when you look at that as an organization, you drafted as best you could. Because sometimes it's not on you, it's the draft class. Yeah, you got the first round, you got the first overall pick in a weak draft.
But there's no franchise and changing type player in that draft.
Now one of them. The only two or three players that B mentioned off of that list that I could consider taking over Kenyon Martin would have been Jamal Crawford. And Jamal Crawford physically does not have the intangibles that Kenyon Martin had. And when they drafted Kenyon Martin, their point guard at the time, if I'm not mistaken, was Stephon Marbury.
Right. And to piggyback off FIFO's point, that's why Jay King was franchise changing because you pretty much swap point guards.
And then the man went to the
two straight finals.
Yeah.
Just off swapping point guards.
Yeah.
You got the same Kenyon Martin, Kerry Kittles and them. You say, hey, Jay Kidd, buy Stephon Marbury. He went to Phoenix. And now you went to two straight finals. Yep. Just off that.
Yep.
What I also thought was interesting was the comments that he had about his tenure at Denver and how Chauncey Billups came in and changed that organization from a leadership standpoint. You got to go back and listen to that, man, because he was straight no
hose bar, no filter, nothing.
Cursing and everything.
Yes.
And it just took me back to, like, I remember that Nets team. And
oh, yeah.
You know.
They was for real.
Yeah, they just ran up against a monster, you know, in the Lakers and then
Spurs.
Yep. He thinks they could have beaten the Spurs if, what was it, game five? And I don't even remember how that series played out. But yeah, I was just, huh?
No, go ahead.
No, I just thought it was interesting when I was listening. I was like, number one pick, you went to the finals twice. Like, if your organization is that good when you select them as number one and you look at the return on your investment.
Yes, because of the other bad investments you could have potentially made.
Yeah.
And everybody else on that list would have been way worse. And that's what I'm saying. Like, he fit what they had going on with Kerry Kittles, with Stephon at the time. Like, you needed a big man. Like I said, on that list, the only other person, hindsight, almost 20 years later, who's the only other guy that's still playing is Jamal Crawford.
Still going strong.
He's been a three-time six-man of the year. The man is 39 years old. He's still playing like he's 18. It's crazy.
Dude,
that's the only guy on that list that I would have took over Kenyon Martin, but he wouldn't have fit. So when I look at that,
you already had Kerry Kittles at the time.
Exactly. They made the best pick, and they got the most return on any investment that they could have had. So, yes, the Nets organization did the best they could. Now digressing back to Joel Embiid, I think that if they redid that draft of, 2 years ago, right? Because he was 2014, right?
Yeah.
I think he would have went over Wiggins. Seeing what we see right now?
If he was
healthy, coming out.
That was
out.
The only reason why, right? Because he wasn't fracture in his leg.
Not necessarily, because remember, Wiggins was supposed to be the next Bron. That's what they were touting Wiggins as.
He was.
LeBron?
Yes. Look, not saying he's going to be LeBron, but he's going to be the next game-changing wing guy. Like the franchise guy. Some people, they didn't know what to think of Joel Embiid. I know I was one of the few saying he's the real deal, take Joel hurt or not.
Because Cleveland had a chance to get him.
Exactly.
They would have messed it up, though. They would have messed it up.
Wiggins. They look at Wiggins now.
I think they would have messed it up.
He's blossoming into like a star now. So, yeah.
Because Cleveland, when we saw they got Waiters and Bennett, and we know they were just bad players overall. But I think if they drafted, I don't think they would have had the patience that the Sixers had to let him fully heal. They made this guy sit out 2 years before they put him on the
court. Well, not made him. He got hurt before going to the NBA.
He got hurt last year?
He got hurt twice.
Yeah, he got hurt twice.
He had a second foot surgery.
You don't remember
that? I know, but I thought that was at the tail end of the first year. And they just extended it into...
Mm-mm.
Okay, all right. My timeline is off.
He got hurt twice, and that was the real reason why.
That's when everybody... Because
I remember...
Allowed me to come at the Odin.
Because I remember we was messing with Q about that when he got injured the second time. Mm-hmm. Like
we called him Odin.
Yeah.
But look, man, like I told y'all years ago, this guy has stuff you just cannot teach. And after listening to that interview, it just put into perspective, because obviously you guys know that I coach basketball. I've coached some raw players. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes it's a good thing because they're able to understand and apply exactly what you say, how you say it. And sometimes they don't know what the hell you're talking about, right? So Joel Embiid's one of those rare guys that you say something and he gets it. He can emulate, he can imitate, and he can apply it. When he was coming up, like I said, he started playing basketball at the age of 16. The man is not older than, 22 right now?
Mm-hmm.
20. So he's been playing a total of 6 years of basketball. And tell me what center is better than him. Pure center. Because Karl Anthony Towns, to me, is a four. He could play
you
five.
Think so?
But I think he's a four. No, I think he's a four.
How tall is he?
6'11".
No, I thought they got him at
6'11". He could play five.
They got him at 7 feet. He's 7 feet.
He more 6'11". You look at some real 7-footers against him. He a little hunchback a little bit. He's 6'11".
I think he's a center, man. Because when I think of like someone who's playing center, but it can be power four, it's like Al Horford. Like, you know, you look at Al Horford, you'd be like, well, that's a power four. He's not a center. I think Anthony Towns is a center.
I think he's in the mold of Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis could play center, but he's a power. I think where he could do the most damage is power forward.
Really?
That's just me.
I think he's because
I think Cat is that new stretch four. He can bang threes. He can handle. He can pass. there's some centers that can do that. I think he could play center at times, but I don't think that he's your full-time center, which is the reason why he plays with Gorgui Dieng. That's the reason why they start Gorgui. You know what I'm saying?
But he starts at the four, right?
Who?
Gorgui.
That's semantics. On the basketball court, it's how you play, what you do, what your responsibilities are. When I look at the responsibilities, especially offensively, Cat plays more like a four than a five. Defensively, he's both. I can't front. It's kind of like these guards now, right? James Harden, what is he? Is he really a two guard? Because he's the best two guard in the league. But right now, he's looking like he's a top 5 point guard.
Yeah.
So those guys, there's right now the NBA is all about interchangeability. And Carl, Embiid, Anthony,
DeMarcus,
these guys.
They worked last night.
It don't matter what. Give them a basketball and put them on the court and say, go hoop. And that's it. They're going to figure it out.
So Andre, Drummond a center?
He's a center. He's only a center.
He's
only a center.
Yeah.
So Embiid, you said he's the best right now?
All I'm saying is this. Obviously, the man is only restricted to playing 22 minutes a game, max of 24. When I see him play, right, and obviously he has not been able to hit other levels, right? He hasn't been able to get consistency because he's not playing in back-to-backs, right? It's just a lot of stuff that he just has not been able to do because of the injuries.
And he hasn't played in an NBA game enough.
Enough, right? Yeah. Like, he hasn't had enough NBA experience, but every time he plays, oh my God, if he doesn't jump off of the screen and just say, yo, I'm the greatest dude on this court right now. There's been very few games that he does not look like the best player on the basketball court. Almost every Philly game that I've watched, he looks like the best guy. And like, dude, you can't coach that. You can't be like, oh, go out here and play hard. No, it jumps out. And for the fact that he's averaging, just think about his averages, right? Like, he's averaging over 2 blocks a game in 22 minutes.
Yeah, 22 minutes.
So you
give him 38,
that the elite players play 35 to 38 minutes a game. You mean to tell me you give him almost another 20 minutes a game? Oh my God, what is this guy? What type of numbers is this guy going to put up? And then the efficiency numbers.
He stay healthy. Hopefully he don't be a Greg Oden. Hopefully he don't be a Greg Oden.
Were you surprised about how good he was when you first saw him this season, B?
Not really, just because of what he was doing in college. But you can't really, because college, he was like men's amongst boys in college. So it was just like seeing that. I didn't know he had the footwork like that he had. Now, I don't know if he kind of got that from Kansas to now.
Nah, he had it then.
Look, I didn't see it that much in Kansas.
But that's the reason why I always say change some of these NCAA rules, because it does not allow special players to be as special as they can be in college. The court's a little bit smaller. The lane is packed. There's defensive 3 seconds because there is no defensive 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's a lot of things that you can do to stifle star players. That's the reason why they blossom in the NBA, because now you have to be honest. You gotta guard me. Mm-hmm. You and three other guys can't guard me.
And there's no.
You have to guard me.
There are a few people in the league that I've seen, because it's transitioned away from centers, that can guard Embiid right now.
No, yeah. No. Look, you know what? To answer your question in terms of being surprised, it's yes and no. No, because I've been telling people for years that Embiid was the hands down real deal. So that didn't surprise me. But there's facets of his game that did surprise me. And it was crazy to hear Brett Brown talk about he's surprising Brett Brown. Mm. You know what I'm saying? The fact that the man has a three-point shot, step-back three-point shot at that, at 7'2", yeah. I didn't know that.
Comfortable.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I knew he had a face-up game. I knew he had like a pump fake and go type of move. I didn't really know he had crossovers for a big man. I didn't know he can get you with a pump fake, in and out moon crossover, and then go yam on two. Mm-hmm. I didn't know he had all of that, but the footwork, I knew he had that.
Yeah, I didn't really know he had like good footwork like that. I mean, I knew he had like a good face up game, but like, I didn't know his footwork was that good. From what I'm seeing now, I'm like, damn.
Yeah, no, I knew the footwork was great. I knew the touch. And to me, that was the one thing that I saw from Joel Embiid that separated him from almost every big man that I've watched. The touch. Like, it's hard to explain it, but the level of touch that he has around the basket, when he gets and he goes up for a hook shot, like that, it's guard-like. And I don't think I can recall a 7'2 center that has guard-like touch in the paint. I just, Hakeem comes to mind. I really can't think of nobody else that really had exquisite touch. Like, Tim Duncan had touch, but it wasn't Embiid's level touch. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And in that interview, Embiid and Brett Brown were talking about how Tim Duncan calls Embiid and saying that he's watched him play and he gives him a whole bunch of, and he says he's impressed. Hey, look, man, Embiid's impressive, man. If you don't think he's impressive, I don't know what type of basketball you're watching.
Are you still waiting? Are you still liking the process?
Yes.
Or the friend, you know, oh, the
of course. Look, here's the thing, right?
Now, when Ben come back, I still feel he should be the starting PG when he comes back, but. That's neither here or there. But what you about to say?
Well, I think you get that eventually. You got Embiid. You got Simmons. You still don't have a point guard.
Sergio's a nice stopgap.
I mean, yeah, Sergio's because nice you're not really. I guess I'll take you
it
on.
It looked like
they're
about to probably be on pace to having another number one pick again this season.
Yeah, because he can't. Like, what I like about Embiid is that he's extremely competitive. He's not settling for losing.
Nope.
Yeah.
Like a lot of
he's not settling, and I like that. You like to see that in a young player.
Oh yeah,
young,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And he wants it in the big moments. Yeah. Like they go to him for game winning shots, game winning plays, and I like the fact that he makes game winning plays off the ball, big blocks, deflections, steals. It's not just he's multifaceted. He's not just gonna. Like a Jahlil Okafor. I think Jahlil is going to be a great center. 2010 guy, you already know his ceiling, right? Because you see it. Mm-hmm. But does he impact the game like Joel does? Hell no.
Well, then the gap between Okafor and Embiid is incredible.
And they both were like, what, top yes. pick? Well, yeah. I think Okafor was third. Number three?
But and so did Joel.
You can see how much better that Embiid is over Okafor in terms of everything he can do on the court. And I'm just surprised at how light Embiid is on his feet. Yep. Mm-hmm. It is amazing to me. Like I see this dude do certain plays like on highlights, and I'm like, I'm just literally sitting there shaking my head. Because the only other person that comes to mind is, of course, Anthony Davis, the guys you guys have been talking about. And even when I see Anthony Davis play sometimes, like his jumper looks so sweet. Mm-hmm. You know, he looks so comfortable everywhere on the court. He looks unstoppable at times. But when I watch Embiid and I'm just looking at just all of the moves that he has, he reminds me of Hakeem. And to hear Tim Duncan is reaching out, giving him that game.
Mm-hmm.
But see, look. Remember how I said how raw Embiid is, and sometimes guys are able to just pick up. He said the way he learned was he was just watch Hakeem. Tapes and just go out there and emulate. Because in all honesty, that's how I learned how to play basketball. Growing up in Chicago, I was born in 84, the year Jordan was drafted by the Bulls, right? So obviously at 3-4 years old, I wasn't watching basketball. Mm-hmm. I didn't really start watching basketball till the 90s when Jordan started winning championships. So as a young, impressionable guy that had no basketball foundation, I would pop in a Michael Jordan tape, watch it, take mental notes on certain things he did, go outside and do exactly what he did, come back upstairs to the house, pop in another tape, take mental notes, and go back outside and do that. So if that's what he's been doing, think about it. He's only been doing it for 6 to 7 years now. And he's this good? Where is his ceiling? Where does it get scary where it's like he starts to put everything together? Mm-hmm. Experience, talent, athleticism. Right. All of that. So if we're praising him this much right now, imagine 3 years from now when it really starts to just culminate and just bubble up to the top. Because think about Anthony Davis. We saw it early. And his earliness was not as great as Embiid. It just wasn't. I don't care what nobody says.
So let's talk about Andrew Wiggins. Let's transition to him because he's been playing fantastic this year. Like, it seemed like he's in a zone right
year
now, but
three.
It looks like he's going to sustain himself throughout the rest of this year. Are you surprised? Because
Nope. Ken, look. Anybody that watches Dead End Sports, what do I always say about all of the youngins? 3 to 5. What year is this for Wiggins? I want you to answer. It's not rhetorical.
Third year.
By the third year with elite level NBA talent, that's when they start to
this
scratch.
Is coming
it.
Out party.
They start to scratch that
this
surface.
Is coming out
like,
party.
Oh man, next year. And what did I say about Karl Anthony Towns this year? 2010. He was 18 and 9 last year. What like? These guys, they are elite. Wiggins is elite, and he's adding things to his game to push him further and further into that elite status. You see that the three-point shot and the long mid-range shot is more consistent.
Yep.
You saw early in his career, he knew that he was bigger than a lot of the guys that they were trying to check him, put him in the post. His post game is a little bit more refined now. His ball handling, I think, is the single most biggest improvement that he's made this year. Now I can attack you one-on-one. He was always a one-on-one type of player, but now I can truly face you and get you with a multitude of moves and counter moves. And then on top of that, I have the three-point game now. He's becoming increasingly hard to stop.
Remember what Kobe said? He said he reminded me of a young him.
Of a young him.
Playing against him. That looked like me when I was 19 years old.
And you know what's scary about Wiggins? He's in year three, right? And his numbers look like Jimmy Butler's numbers. How long did it take Jimmy to get to his point?
Yeah, like 7 years, 6, 7 years now.
Wiggins in his third year. What do you think he's going to do in the next 2 years? He's only going to grow. That's why I say these youngins, give him 3 to 5.
Oh, you guys surprised that they're struggling?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, because I think when we did Dead End Sports, we was all kind of predicting them to be like a 7, 6, 7. Even though it's still early, for them to come out the gate struggling still with that nice youth, the talent that they have, you would think.
And the coach.
Yeah. Oh yeah, especially the coach. You would think they'll come out firing a little more better than what they are now.
But you know, but in basketball, and me and B really, really hoop. You know, sometimes there's an adjustment period, even to a new coach,
to
new players. Chris Dunn's a rookie.
Yep.
You know,
and he struggled.
Yep.
And he's struggling. He's struggling, but he's. I think he's gonna figure it out. LaVine is trying to, like, kind of insert himself. Like he's trying to be like, hey, don't forget about me. I'm nice too.
Because that was his team before Wiggins came, right?
No. They got. Wiggins was first.
No.
Wiggins and LaVine came in the same draft.
Were they?
They were in the same draft. Wiggins was later. I mean, no, not Wiggins. LaVine was later, but remember, they traded for Wiggins. Wiggins was taken first. LaVine was like 13th pick or something like that, like right before the end of the lottery. But they were taken in the same draft. And then Cat came.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then remember, Shabazz Muhammad before all of them. So they have a young squad. I think that they just have to figure it out. I honestly, because it's not a talent thing. We know it's not a coach thing.
Yeah,
because
Zach was drafted 13th.
Yeah, that
by
same
the Minnesota,
year.
By the Minnesota,
exactly.
Yeah, same year.
So what it is to me is just a working relationship. It's not working right now, but all signs indicate that it will. We know Thibodeau. Every year that he's coached or been on the sideline, he has a top 10 defense. When you have a top 10 defense, you're going to be one of the top teams in the NBA. Or whatever professional sport you play, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to be one of the better teams. So I think that'll come around. Also, offensively, I like what they're doing. It'll work, man. I have faith. I truly have faith.
Because you have to think, like, when I'm looking at it, I'm a little bit surprised at the record and the way that they play, because Thibodeau, typically, when we think of Thibodeau, we don't think that's the way they would actually play on the court. You expect discipline, you expect defense, and I think that when the Timberwolves have who was the coach last year? Sam Mitchell. Yeah, Sam Mitchell. So there are a lot of bad habits that he has to come in and break.
Not necessarily.
You don't think so?
No, not necessarily, because I followed Minnesota a lot. And
talked about him as a coach.
Here's the thing. So what Minnesota was trying to do was get these guys to be professionals, to understand what work ethic is, to instill the foundations of great players, right? Like, it wasn't so much about X's and O's outside of let's get you prepared for NBA life. Because you guys are all young, 18, 19, 20.
Yeah, the kids, the babies.
They're babies, right? So that's what they needed. Now, this transition to Thibodeau is different because now there's expectation. You know what I'm saying? So, and when you look at Thibodeau's squads, for the most part, they've been experienced guys.
That is true. That is true. Coming from Boston.
Boston to Chicago
that had roles who have been, okay.
Exactly. Yep. So now when you have this super young team, they have to learn how to get to that. So some of these, because they're losing close games, just like they did last year, obviously because they're talented.
Yeah.
But this year, it's gonna help them out more so because of Thibodeau. But they have to get into those battles, and then they have to win those close games, which is the one thing that they're not doing. But I have faith that they will with experience with Thibodeau.
And that's kind of what I see, like when I saw Philly lose a couple of close games, and it was like this is just experience because now you're competitive,
exactly.
You know, you're not being blown out. So now, how do you take that being in a competitive game, how do you take that and flip it to where it benefits you with a W? Like you come out on the top end of that.
And talking about experience and coming out with the W and winning close games, the Lakers.
I got to give it up for Luke Walton.
I think he gets the young players. I think he gets it, I guess. That's what it seems like because I think Byron Scott was just – I think a little too old school for these new cats. And I think Luke Walton, he gets it.
And remember in the Kenya Martin interview, he talked about Byron Scott. Byron Scott has always been that way.
Yeah. So I think Byron just didn't have a way to connect. I think Luke Walton does. And if the Lakers pull off and make it to the playoffs, does it void Steve Kerr's coach of the year last year? Because you remember – Luke Walton coached half of that season last year. Like, 44 games, 43 games before Steve Kerr came?
All I know is Ken needs to say that Luke Walton is not a bum. Because I remember you gave Luke Walton a lot of flack. Oh, well, everything's just easy. And you just step in and
that's
you
what
can
I'm saying.
Win.
So, say if Lakers be a 6 or 7 seed in the West with this young core group of guys.
That would be crazy.
It would. So it will make you question Steve Kerr's coach of the year. Last year,
Luke is doing a fantastic job, much better than I imagined. And I gotta say that I did think that he benefited from having players that were great.
But now you can't really say nothing now. He's like making you shut up because he got the young group of guys.
But you know what? When I look at that Laker roster, right, compared to some of the other young and up and coming teams like Philly and Minnesota, you know the difference that I see there? They have more veterans, right? You have Mozgov, you have Luol Deng, you have Swaggy, you know, you have who else is there?
Nick
Young. Yeah, Nick Young. Okay. That's a Swaggy. Okay. Lou Williams.
Off the bench. He's giving instant offense.
Exactly.
Off the bench.
So that's just five guys that I named. I know they got a couple other ones. I'm just drawing a blank right now, but they have more veteran guys than those other teams do. You know, so I think that also plays into it.
Yeah, we always said, like, a team like Minnesota needs more veterans. They need some veterans.
They need more veterans. Yeah, yeah. Because right now the veterans on that squad are Shabazz Muhammad and Ricky Rubio.
Young. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Still, they don't know. They don't have
tried and true guys. Mm-hmm. Like, even though the Lakers don't, like the only real tried and true guy is Luol Deng to me, and Miles Goff too.
Yeah.
The man got a championship, and he contributed along the way.
Yeah.
But the rest of those guys, like Swaggy P, okay, you have experience because you've played in the league for a while, right? But you don't have that moxie, you don't have that championship pedigree, right? Like, Lou Williams, you know, he's been a journeyman. But they have guys there that, with Luke Walton's coaching, he's just putting it together. I think a big part of that is D'Angelo Russell stepping his game up. We saw it in Summer League, and he's transitioning that now to the regular season. We've seen Brandon Ingram have more struggles than success, but you see it. You see that, like you said, the kid is talented.
Give him year three.
3 to 5. Yeah. You got to give him 3 to 5. We're Randall, seeing Julius Randle being a poor man's version of Draymond. Obviously, he don't have the shot. He don't have the overall vision. But the foundation of a Draymond Green type player is there. Mm-hmm. You know, so Luke Walton has a lot of things working for him. And like B said, I think the biggest thing is that he knows how to connect and maximize players. Because old coaches like a Byron Scott, man, they're here to coach NBA vets. They're here to win now. Mm. And like I've been saying for the last couple of years, through the end of the last 4 years of Kobe, you're no longer in a win now mode. You have to start thinking about the future and draft picks and youngins and all of this. Luke Walton is a coach for that. Byron is not. So I think the Lakers organizationally are now starting to turn the corner. Talent-wise, they've drafted well, because I didn't even mention Jordan Clarkson, which is part of that young nucleus. Mm-hmm. I didn't mention Larry Nance Jr., that's part of that nucleus. They have drafted well, and you have to give credit where credit is due. Mitch Kupchak did a hell of a job with what he had. And as much as I don't like it, the way they handled the Kobe situation was good, because he's going to have a statue.
You had to close out that chapter.
You had to close it out.
Yep.
And you had to do it gracefully and respectfully.
Yep. Yep.
Greg Oden, I'm sure you guys saw, he said that he's going to go down as the biggest bust in NBA history. I don't agree with that.
I don't agree with that either.
You don't agree with that? You be? Are you blinking?
He thinking. Yeah, he thinking.
He blinking and thinking.
I'm thinking. Biggest bust in NBA history. Because he was number one, wasn't he?
Number one over Kevin Durant, which I didn't agree with.
It was the right move.
It was the right move. It was the
right
move.
At the time, it was the right move.
At the time. Because you got the...
I know the pieces that Portland... Yeah. Batum,
Brandon Roy. LaMarcus. Brandon Roy was that dude, you know what I'm saying, before the knee, unfortunately, the knee injuries and stuff. But I understand why they picked who they picked. Because you got to think of a big guy. Big guys at his talent coming out of college... They coming down, you know, they don't come that often. You know?
Not like that.
So, not
but
like
they
that.
Bust more often.
Yeah,
would you say that?
Was Michael Oliver Candy number one?
Yes. But wait. Me.
We may have, okay, I'm just, that's a hot take or a take or whatever you want to call it, about them busting more often. I would have to look.
Right, because look at the expectations for Greg Oden. See, I don't think Oliver Candy had like super, like he didn't have. Ceiling expectations.
I don't think he had like superstar expectations. It was more like Kenyon Martin.
That's
you know,
what I'm
like
so
you know, he's like the best guy right now.
But is that considered a bust more so? Greg Oden was kind of like, oh man, they got
you know, the reason why I disagree with Greg Oden is because when it's due to injury like that, that's not your fault.
It's not your fault.
That's not like,
yeah,
but
it's not
a
like
factor.
It's not like Kwame Brown.
Exactly.
Like when he played.
Exactly.
He played.
And
he
that's where I was going to go.
He had chances to prove himself year after year
after year.
It's not like he had bad ankles or bad knees.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
So to me, Kwame Brown has been the biggest bust that I've seen in my NBA experience.
Yeah.
Kwame Brown.
Because he had chances to work on his game, to get better. He had chances to play. It wasn't like he was injured for sideline. He was sidelined from injury. So.
Exactly.
Anthony Bennett?
He out of the league.
No, he's playing.
Where?
The Nets. Brooklyn.
As
that was the last squad. I don't know if he got cut.
That's what I said. I think he's out of the league.
He can't even make the rotation.
That's what
I'm saying.
He
can't even get minutes.
No, he can't. You know what? But to me, he's not the biggest bust because I don't know what the hell Cleveland was doing.
Okay, that's valid.
I don't know what the hell Cleveland was doing with that damn pick. They messed all that up because you could have took Nerlens.
But Kwame was being hyped up.
Yes. Kwame was supposed to be the guy.
That's what I'm saying.
And like B said, he had ample opportunity to prove himself. You know what I'm saying? Greg Oden did not. And in the little bit he did, let's be honest, was he not a dominant center? Yes or no?
He was averaging damn near double-double just in the little
in the little bit of time.
Yeah.
And in the little bit of time that he played in Miami, to me, he looked like, yo, why not play more?
Right.
Man, Robert Parrish was balling, man. That's what I call it. Dog, how are you in college freshman and you look exactly like Robert Parrish?
Yeah.
Like, and Robert Parrish is like in his 50s, dude. You look just like Robert Parrish. I called him Robert Parrish Jr. He's Robert Parrish Jr. Because I've never seen a 19-year-old look so old in my life.
Only one other guy.
Who?
Tyrone Hill.
Ooh.
But did he look young though? Like,
no, he always looked old.
Like, always
look old. Yes. Tyrone Hill.
Philly.
Philly Tyrone Hill. Right. KI Tyrone Hill.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Tyrone Hill just ugly. He's an ugly nigga. All
right.
You know what I'm saying?
He looked old as hell too though.
This is the last one I have because this is interesting for me. And you guys know, man, I just kind of see things differently sometimes. So I want to get your take on it. I know I ran this by B one time we were talking, but we know about Golden State's early struggles in the season, and it was really all about Kevin Durant. Steph Curry go 0 for 10, first time in games. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the number. I'm sorry.
Broke his three-pointer in the game record.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then came right back and broke the record with 13.
Then he snapped the game afterwards. Of course, like B said, broke the record. To me,
single game record, I mean.
Yeah, single game record. To me, that was telling me that I looked at it like this. Stephen Curry was taking his team back. Because everything had been about Kevin Durant, and they were trying to go through Kevin Durant.
Of course.
And Steph Curry, on record, has said that he doesn't care about MVPs or anything like that. He's okay with playing the second fiddle. But I don't know if that's necessarily true. For him to kind of go through him first and then Kevin Durant slide into that number two role where it seems like he was okay with an OKC, but just in a more of an offense and a team environment where it's okay for him to be that guy.
Yeah. The reason being is because, and this is going to sound crazy because KD's a 7-foot shooting guard, but it's more effortless for Steph. What he does, look, man.
Yeah, the way he shoots them threes.
We've never seen nothing like
this. The way he
shoot
them threes like that, man, coming off picks and just coming down off the dribble.
We'd never seen, and there was a stat that Steph Curry is the best off the dribble shooter in the NBA, right, last year. The second best off the dribble shooter was KD. You know what I'm saying? So now you have the two best off the dribble shooters on the same squad. One of them plays point guard. One of them is a wing player, right? I'm not even going to categorize KD. No, he's just a wing player. He's out there. So with all that being said, the ball is more so in Steph Curry's hands. So you got to let him make the decisions more, whether that means scoring or passing. So that means that does have to go through him first, you know. So and I think that that's how they're going to be better, is that Steph kind of has to decide, okay, is it going to be one of them nights where everything I throw up is just going to go in, or am I going to get other people involved? Is Clay going off? Is KD going off? And then play off of that. But he has to kind of be the catalyst and let everybody else kind of fall into play with him being the primary focus, right? Mm-hmm. And when I say that, that does not mean that you run plays for him to score. Mm-hmm. That means that you run plays for him to be a decoy at times. Yep. You run plays to get him open. Doesn't necessarily mean he's going to score, but the team is going to score. And that's what I mean, that you run it through Steph first most nights. Some nights it's going to be KD. Some nights it's going to be Clay. Mm-hmm. Some nights it's very fewer, but it's some nights it's going to be Draymond. But at the end of the day, you're 100% right, Ken. I think that they're at their best when Steph is the main guy at first, or just playing 1A, 1B. Because sometimes it could be a KD, primarily, and Steph being secondarily. But those are their two best players.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Really. Clearly.
And I think it raises the question now, is Clay kind of expendable? Because there have been rumors of him being traded.
I haven't heard any of this.
I ain't never seen none of that like that. That man gangsters out for
he
that.
Drunk the beer and then he was like, after he sipped it. Did you see that?
I did not see it, but that? I heard about it.
Man.
That was the most gangster
thing. Clay showing out, huh?
Yeah.
It is. It's kind of like what that told me, and maybe it's not tied together. But it's almost like, go ahead and trade me if you want to.
But remember, what Clay said in the offseason.
My game ain't changing.
Yep, he said it. And, you know, it.
Watching live for the first time. KB Inge. Yeah, man.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Like, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead and trade me if you want to.
Nah, I don't know if he was paid for that, and I doubt it. But there's something to that.
There is.
And the thing about it is that he's starting to kind of find his way in that system. But when you bring a guy, a high profile guy, what I think is the second best player in the NBA right now, in KD, to that team, and you basically are relegated to the third, you're the third wheel, you know, I can understand him. And it's weird. On one hand, you're like, okay, it's going to take you some time to adjust. But on the other hand, in the multiple interviews, there was one with Draymond that said Klay's the perfect guy because he doesn't care mm-hmm. about shots. He just cares about mm-hmm. winning. And they are winning right now. But sometimes at some point, we all have egos. Mm-hmm. And I know people have said Klay doesn't have an ego. But third wheel, when you were the guy, and that goes back to what I was saying about Steph. Steph was the man last year. And it just reminded me of when LeBron came to Miami, and that was Wade's team. And Wade had to say, it's LeBron's team. And then from there, they took off. With this situation, it's a little bit different because Steph tried to do that early and tried to say, hey, I'm okay with being the second fiddle in the system as long as we win and win championships. But it seemed like when it started to actually take place and we started to see them play, it don't seem like he was comfortable with that. And that's why it was like, okay, I'm going to snap, and this is my team.
Yeah, because they were kind of forcing KD the ball.
Right.
You know, like it didn't feel like prototypical Golden State Warriors basketball. And they're starting to figure it out with still being – because Golden State force feeds the ball to the hot hand. It don't matter who it is. They will do that, right? But they do that on occasion or whenever the situation calls for it. But they were trying to force feed KD the ball too much and getting out of what made them great, which is letting Steph launch for damn near 50 feet sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And Steph was giving that up. And the thing is mm-hmm. that they can't be great and Steph giving that up. You still have to do that. So it begs the question, right? We're still talking about Klay. The team overall is weaker right now that they added KD. They're not as deep. The bench isn't as good. Mm-hmm. They don't have as many options, right?
Right.
The
right.
good thing is that obviously you could always keep two All-Stars on the damn court at all times with that squad now because you got four of them. But are they overall better than as a squad than they were last year? So it begs the trade rumor questions, mm-hmm. right? Like Boston is one of those teams. So if in Boston, if you make that trade with Golden State and you can take back an Avery Bradley, you could take back the Nets' number one pick of this draft, which is going to be a top three pick. Mm-hmm. If you can take back a Kelly Olynyk and somebody else for a Klay, you might. They were talking about Crowder, Olynyk, Avery Bradley, and the Nets first round pick for Klay. To me, I definitely have to explore that trade because how much are you really losing between Klay and Avery Bradley? Not much.
Or Crowder.
Well, I like Crowder because he's like. He's your Iguodala replacement.
Yeah.
Moving in the future. Right? Yep. He's exactly what Iguodala does.
Yep.
Avery Bradley is going to put up the numbers that Klay is putting up now and do it happily because that's his role. He knows his role.
And defense.
All of that. You don't lose no defense. You lose size. Obviously, you lose shooting.
Right.
But Avery Bradley's a three-point shooter now. Yep. Mm-hmm. So you know that you just can't leave him.
Right.
He's not going to go off for 37 in the quarter.
Right,
hell no.
Right.
But he's going to be able to contribute in that way. Then you get another big, and Kelly Olynyk that can shoot threes. Mm-hmm. And then you get a potential top three pick that you could go flip for another player a la Nerlens Noel.
Right.
Because Philly's still in the market of still getting young talent.
Yep.
So if you're going to give me the Nets first pick, go take Nerlens.
Yep.
So now you mean to tell me you're going to have Zaza, Olynyk, Nerlens, Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, KD, Draymond. That's something I got to look at.
Yeah.
I know Klay's nice, but that's something I got to look at. That's something I have to explore.
Where are the rumors coming from?
That was from Brian Scalabrine. Now he writes for like Boston, some newspaper out
there.
So
it's kind of legit.
Milwaukee's also another trade partner. Mm. So I'm looking at that. I'm like, hey, there's no way that if I'm Golden State and I'm making a deal with Milwaukee, you're either giving me Giannis or Jabari. One of them has to be guaranteed in that trade.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You could get a Greg Monroe. You could get Middleton and or what's the tall, lanky lefty? Their big man, Henson.
Henson, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So there are a lot of interesting trade partners out there. To me, I like the Boston move because of the two-part. You get the three players that contribute right now, fit inside of the culture and everything you want to do. You also get the pick that you can flip for another special type of talent. Mm. So, I would I do it? I wouldn't commit to it, but I would have to explore it. I would definitely have to look at it because I don't think Klay can be maximized in this. His role will be marginalized.
Yeah.
And I think because of where he is in his career, he has to personally see how far he can go. Because if Harrison Barnes is out here in Dallas.
And balling,
right.
What you think Klay can do?
Right. On a squad like Milwaukee.
Or Boston,
yeah.
With him, Isaiah Thomas.
He's going to be average like 28 a game.
And Boston needs a guy like Klay.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Give me buckets where they can't stop you because we got the Al Horfords of the world. We got Isaiah Thomas. Yep. Like Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown's a lot nicer than I thought he was going to be.
Me too. Yeah. Me too.
You know what I'm saying?
Me too.
So you add that to that mix, that's scary, man.
All right. Well, I guess we're going to close it out right there. We covered a lot. And this is Off the Bench with B, Ken, and FIFO, and Ralph. No Q and no Ryan.
Nah, not this time.
I think, hopefully Q will be back soon. But we'll see.
Yeah.
But we'll continue to kind of do this, man. I think this was fun.
Yeah.
To actually dedicate a show to basketball. And there are so many things that I know I follow and pick out different storylines throughout the week. So we're going to continue to try to put this together and put this out because I know you guys need that until Q and Ryan can get their ish together.
Yeah, right. They're not off the bench. They're on the bench.
Right.
We the ones getting the playing
time. Damn, that was a good one. I like what you did there.
Yeah, man.
They're not off the bench. They on the bench, damn it. Oh, yeah, you can't. That's right. I forgot. Sorry about that.
That was great. That's a good closeout.
Yeah, all right.
We out.